Forgotten Flicks, Episode 17. We're going commando. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fine episode of the Forgotten Flicks podcast. I am your host, Joel, and I'm here with the other host, Jason.
Wow, a little presumptive, aren't we? Another fine episode.
Oh, I thought you meant
don't we have to get one previously for it to be another fine episode?
That's a good point. I was actually thinking you thought I was presumptuous for referring to us as hosts, because honestly, yeah, we're barely that. More like facilitators of the absurd.
This is like detention with a tape recorder.
Yeah, it really is. Which, did you ever do that? That was fun.
A video camera once, but that was...
I thought that's what got you in detention.
No.
Oh, that's what got you fired from that teaching job. Never mind. The whole swim coach thing.
It wasn't technically teaching. You know, I was a student aide, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so how you doing, Jason?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited about tonight.
Are you really?
My, oh my, is our timing wonderful this evening.
Why is that? Oh, because, yeah.
I think it's hilarious. We chose Commando as our stalwart for this episode, and that I'm driving to work today, and of course the news is all over the place of Arnold's love life and marriage woes and illegitimate child and all that. So we didn't do it on purpose.
Absolutely.
But we'll take all the free press we can get.
So. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because we actually obviously record the show about a week beforehand, right. You know. So by the time you're hearing this, it's probably way old news. And I would be honest, even if you're hearing it the day of, it's still old news because anybody who didn't know that Schwarzenegger was a horn dog?
What? What?
I know. I mean, I remember when he was running for governor, they came out with the, I think it was Playboy or Penthouse, I can't remember which one, but he had done a article where he talked about all the different activities he liked to be involved in when he wasn't pumping iron, because he was pumping other things. So, yeah, I really.
Hey, as much testosterone as that man has pumped through his body, he's, you know.
Yeah.
He's got to be doing something.
Well, most of it was synthetic. And
no comments.
Yeah. Allegedly. Allegedly. And on top of that, you know, Maria Shriver, seriously, you're a Kennedy. Why would you ever trust any guy? Just like
yeah.
I mean, your whole family's lineage.
Women in that family
would just be like, aware. Okay, if it's a guy and it marries one of us, seriously.
That's part of the deal. Talk for, yeah, Kennedy, you know.
Listen here, son.
Please.
Yeah, when you get your lady, you got to have about 8 more. Take her down to the park in your car and get wicked, wicked good with her. Anywho, so.
Wow, that was a great Boston accent. Don't know so much if it came to the Kennedy, but.
Yeah, whatever.
So.
It doesn't really matter. Seriously. I'm so freaking tired. And Jason's exhausted. He's been driving all day. I had the experience last night of my beautiful 3.5-year-old walking into our room and going, Mama, Dada, my tummy hurts.
Those are always the best. And then getting up and going to work the next day.
Oh, no. That would have been bad enough. Although I got to give the little guy credit because he didn't fuss about it. He just stood in one place and puked his guts out. And then he, you know, just other than my tummy hurts, other than that, which was pretty much adorable, put him back to bed. And then the baby started to cry at 3 a.m. And I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. And I'm getting up at 5. What? So if I go unconscious at any point during this broadcast,
I'll break out my air horn and wake you up.
So anyway.
All right.
Yes. Would you like to move on? Carry on, as it were.
Let us carry on going commando.
They hunted him down.
You know, Colonel, we went to a lot of trouble to find you.
They murdered his friends. And they took the only thing he would kill for.
If he wants your kid back, then you gotta cooperate. Right?
Wrong.
Now, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
Do you think that he is going to give us any problems?
You'll do exactly as he's told.
Hasta luego, fellas.
You're a funny guy, Sully. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
Are you going to tell me what's going on or what?
No. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired. What are you doing?
Helping you get her back.
Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's what they did.
I lied.
Okay, so...
All right.
Yeah, obviously tonight we're discussing 1985's Commando starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger. And, yeah.
Get to the chopper!
Yeah.
You know, we've had this conversation before. I just like to intro with this just quickly. I think that it's, again, quite hilarious that some of the people who were initially rejected for their voice being either too much of it, having too much of an accent or being too different, end up being some of the greatest cinema voices of the century.
I don't know if you'd say the greatest voices as much as they're very distinctive and identifiable.
Most recognizable, yes. Iconic. How about that?
Yeah, okay, that's better.
Some of the most iconic. It became their hallmark. I mean, how many think of all the people who can do some kind of Stallone or Schwarzenegger. It's just awesome. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out.
That was a great point. So on that note, that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening. And
good night.
We'll be here all week.
Good. Good night.
Yeah, sorry.
Try the video.
We should have let that roll. People have been like, what the hell? There's no way these douche nozzles finished under 10 minutes. There's zero way.
No, they just think that we edited it wrong. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
So tonight's feature, we're going on a pretty good rotation. We're actually going on a good rotation of switching between horror, sci-fi, action, comedy. We want to kind of go through those. I think the only one we really haven't represented much will be drama.
And drama is to me, it's vague because –
Yeah.
So I think we have a few down the road you can make an argument have, you know, dramatic elements, but are we going to be doing Sophie's Choice or
On Golden Pond?
Yeah, or On Golden Blonde we might do.
That's on our sister podcast that we do. That's
That's Forgotten Pricks.
Forgotten Porn.
Oh, Forgotten Porn.
Forgotten Pricks. Pricks with an X.
Pricks with an X. Oh, dear God. So go ahead, Jason. Tell us a little about Commando, because we're going to need the full 8 minutes you allotted to get through the synopsis of this complex. And hold on. Let me just add this caveat. Jason and I have not discussed, as per usual, what either of us thought. The only thing I did is I had to call him last night because we had something else going on that one day we'll tell everybody, and hopefully everybody will be as excited as we are. But for now, we're going to let it lie. And because
we've got something secret coming.
We got something secret. But that being said, I called him, and the only thing I did, because he had just started the movie, I had just finished it, and all I said was, Willie. And he's like, Willie? And of course, Schwarzenegger just happened. So it's like, had Schwarzenegger happened yet?
Not yet. Oh, I hadn't heard about it.
So I was kind of prophetic in my use of that word, even. But
very good.
But as we move forward, the word Willie will come into play. And we're not talking about Willie Ames of Charles in Charge and Zapped and Bible Man. No, no, no. We are talking about a different Willie altogether. And we're not even talking about Schwarzenegger's Willie. No, no, no.
Not yet, anyway.
Okay. So anyway, the Commando. Go ahead and synopsize this one, man.
Yes. And this is a highly complex feature, actually.
I swear to God, if you liked this movie after the shiznit you gave Assault on Precinct 13, I swear to God. Go ahead.
Bring it.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Commando is a story of John Matrix, who is an ex-commando of some sort. They don't really get into details. My guess,
shocking.
He was on SEAL Team 6. He was on SEAL Team 6, most likely.
Oh, of course, yeah.
He's an ex-commando of some sort. The movie opens with someone going around killing these people who seemingly look like these kind of everyday blue collar workers that just someone goes around killing them. And then at one point you go to John Matrix's beautiful mountaintop villa.
Pension's really good for those guys. Really good.
I was thinking, what does he do on the side?
Yeah.
Black Ops must pay really well.
Yeah.
So he's up at his mountain villa with his daughter and no mom. They don't really speak of it. Why? Which, you know, it kind of works. They don't really get into that element other than he's a single dad and his daughter, who is the lovely Alyssa Milano. And in this.
Samantha. Angela. Mona. Jonathan.
Sorry.
That wasn't Alyssa Milano.
Yeah, it was.
My two dads?
Who's the boss?
Oh, you're trying to do a Tony Danza?
Samantha, oh, no. Jonathan.
That's not bad. No. Who the hell would that sound like for My Two Dads?
You sound like the cool dad of My Two Dads.
Oh, you mean the one from your favorite movie of all time, Beastar 6? That guy?
I say yes.
Go ahead.
You wait till we actually talk about my favorite movie of all time. Then you'll have something to mock me about.
Then I will. So anyway, continue. Then, Commando. I don't want to interrupt because this is a very complex story. This is like L.A. Confidential.
So,
nay. This is like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Let me get into the first subplot of this.
The whole plot is a subplot. Go ahead.
No. So he's up at his mountaintop villa and he's chopping wood and, you know, just being manly like he normally is, carrying a giant tree on one arm. And they show some tender moments with he and his daughter building up the relationship they have. And then a helicopter shows up and it's this general who says to John, someone's been killing your team members from when you were back in the military and someone's been killing them. And we want you to watch out. I'm putting these two guys here to protect you. And these two guys in full army green fatigues with machine guns.
Suck at their job.
And he says – and Arnold says to the general, he says – are they any good? And he says, well, they're very good, but not as good as you. Ha, ha, ha.
Then why so bring them?
As soon as the general flies off, both of them get just shot and killed. And the bad guys who mysteriously were trying to – who were killing the other members of his team end up kidnapping his daughter and capturing him alive and tell him, you have to go kill this third world country president and assassinate him or we will kill your daughter. So they toss him onto a plane. The plane ride takes 11 hours to wherever he's going. And they say, you know, it'll take 11 hours. So he gets on the plane with one of the bad guys. As soon as the plane starts to move, he kind of takes the blanket, snaps the neck of the bad guy, throws a blanket over him, puts his hat on his head. And
please don't wake my friend. He's dead tired.
Oh
my God.
I love that. So he basically sets his watch and knows that he has 11 hours to go and save his daughter. So he, through the course of going to save his daughter, meets a flight attendant who is in the airport, Ray Don Chong.
Who is, I like in most things, actually. I like Ray Don Chong.
She is a good actress. Yeah, yes. There's a couple of things. I haven't seen her in a lot, but in a few things. She does a decent job. So in this, she plays a flight attendant who reluctantly decides to help him when she realizes he's really a good guy just trying to save his daughter. And they go off to find the bad guy, and they weave their way through the henchmen all the way up to kind of the finale when he has to fight one of his ex teammates, who is played by Vernon Wells.
Who again, guy I like, but is it just me? And I have to interject this. Did he not look like a doughy Freddie Mercury?
Yes. Yes, he did. Because he's got that black sleeveless shirt, and then he's got that chainmail looking stuff on.
He looked like, and it was the mustache.
Mustache.
It was thick. Yes. Actually, it's kind of a thicker mustache. And he was like, if Freddie Mercury had been like gone like blue collar, and just would swill in beer at night, work in the docks. And
just kind of, put on weight.
Yeah, and said, screw the whole, I'm going to get my teeth fixed and screw the whole cool voice thing. I'm going to just be,
He did kind of the haircut and everything. He was definitely – and he has an Australian accent in this, you know, which he's Australian. But anyway, so it leads up to the climax where they get into the Generalissimo, the main bad guy – played by Dan Hedaya, who is he is actually in my favorite movie of all time, which I'll get to in a moment. But they break into this compound on this remote island somewhere off the coast of California.
Yeah, I have that's in my notes.
We'll get.
Where the hell was this island? And why
he
the
has this
hell?
Fortress, this military fortress with barracks and bunkers and jeeps and everything. And so John Matrix shows up, biggest badass that he is, and he attacks and, you know, basically tries to save
his
daughter.
But you left out the best part.
Spoil the end.
Okay, we won't spoil the end here. Oh, but
we'll spoil the end here.
Of course, we're about to.
Because you can't guess.
Oh, no.
What happens.
No. And more to the point, and again, for those that are new, if you haven't figured out already, the main movie we talk about, a little spoilery. So, oopsie. We need to, the other show I like to listen to, they have a spoiler alert button. I totally need to just come up with those. So I have to think about it. Just hit the button.
You said that like three times.
I know, but I'll do it eventually. So let me just interject this last little tidbit, and then we'll move on to our in-depth, intellectually based analyses of the picture.
Well,
hold on. The towards the end, when he arrives on the island, he did prove one thing. He, in fact, does not go commando, because the only thing that dude wore was a rinky-dink little Speedo banana hammock. And
that's
why? What was the point? Okay, let's back up. Rewind.
Let me digress for one second right here.
Yeah.
Let me digress.
Yes, go ahead.
The man takes a seaplane to this island.
Yes.
They land in a quiet, remote part of the island. He said that's the most remote part of the island. They land on the water.
And how the hell would he know? He's never been there.
He looked at a map. Who knows?
Because a map strategically shows you.
He's got Google Maps.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, 1985. Sorry, I forgot. Google's been around for a long time.
All right. So – they land.
Yes.
He's got a whole bunch of his equipment that he had stole, which, by the way, is one
by
of
his
the
equipment.
Coolest.
Are we talking about the banana hammock or something else?
No.
Okay.
Both. He's got big bags of equipment, and he also has bags with guns in it. So he brings this little inflatable raft.
Oh, God.
And he throws it out of the plane for the, what would you say, 100-yard row to the beach. I mean, it's not even 100 yards. It's like he has to get from the – so he strips down to nothing but his black jockey shorts.
Yeah.
And his boat full of guns.
Yes.
And he gets up on shore, and I'm thinking he's – you know, and I remember this from when I first watched it. I obviously
– oh, I'm sure you did.
I'm thinking he's going to jump off the boat in like scuba gear, or he's going
to
swim down.
Yeah, something to make sense.
No.
Yeah.
No, and I didn't even think about this, so I rewatched it. I'm like
– why the hell does he do that?
He's just getting out of the boat.
Yeah.
He's getting redressed.
Just so we can have that obnoxious 80s.
He never.
I think I need a montage where he puts all his gear on in his pants.
Okay, you know what?
We need to rewind.
Let me just say something. Mr. Lester, I'm speaking to you. Mark Lester.
That would be the director of the piece, who also directed Firestarter.
Yeah.
For starters.
Very fine director. if I had been on set, Mr. Lester, please, you could have done the entire montage.
Did you say Molester?
No.
He said Mr. Mr. Sorry, my bad. I misunderstood.
Molester.
Mr. Molester?
His name is Mark L. Lester, so he really is M. Lester.
I didn't think about that. It is M. Lester.
M. Lester. So,
let me
break it down
ass.
For a second. M. Lester.
Yes?
M. Lester. Listen, you could have done that whole montage with some nice baggy combat pants, and it would just... as bad as we did not need to see that close to Arnold's junk.
Yeah,
I really did.
You to see the true effects of steroid usage.
I got one more nudie thing later, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, yes.
So that's the basic synopsis.
Yes.
It's not complex. You're right.
Really?
And so, yes.
Okay. So moving into the movie.
I forgot to mention this. It's from 1985.
We already mentioned that, but that's okay.
1 year after Terminator.
Way to listen to me.
What?
I said I already said that. Way to listen.
What?
Huh? Okay. So yes.
So our discussion.
Yeah. I want to just jump right into it. Well, we're going to pretty much bypass the fact that the whole buildup of them killing his ex-buddies as some kind of cover, not only did it lack any suspense whatsoever, you didn't care because you don't know who these guys are. You don't know why they're being shot. It didn't even have any sense of mystery. Like, oh my God, why this guy? It didn't.
It almost felt like just a random series of murders.
Especially the car. And spoiler alert. The car. The car scene. Like when the guy steals the car out of the car. Brain fart. The car lot.
Out of the dealership.
The dealership, thank you.
Cadillac.
And the price is the best. It's free. And he takes off. It's like, they never, I mean, there's no reason to think that guy wasn't just some car salesman that just happened to be in the way and get run over.
When I first saw this, I thought that's all it was. I'm like, why is he killing the car salesman? Okay, he's just a bad guy. I didn't realize until much later that that was actually supposed to be one of the team that it turned into a car salesman.
Yes. It is also important to note that Commando was bookended by two classic Schwarzenegger films, Red Sonja, classic, by the way, I was being a sort of smart ass, and Raw Deal, which, to be fair, I literally have not seen probably since 1986. So I probably shouldn't be talking smack about it. I remember it has a really cool cover where he's got like the wife beater on and the slick back hair. And I literally remember nothing about it. But on the opposite ends of those classic films is Terminator and Predator. So.
Yes. And can we mention that Mr. MLester's – MLester?
Yes.
Can I say that?
Yes.
Is it still a rating?
Mark.
We're not getting into that?
Mark L. Lester.
MLester. I still want him on the show. That his next movie after this was Armed and Dangerous.
Ah, John Candy. Eugene Levy. Very cool.
Yeah. No. it was funny, but you know.
Oh no, it's a bad movie, but it's got John Candy. It's sort of immediately I have to use the word cool, the adjective to describe it.
So I'm gonna drop this on you. I love this movie
for
a lot of reasons.
It has to be because of how
awful
it is.
I also know there are some god awful plot holes.
Oh,
and some absolutely
no, there are not plot holes, dude. I filled up a whole booklet of post-it notes on just the plot holes and the contrivances in this movie. And let me just say this too. I saw this. You have to also understand our timing is impeccable because of the whole Schwarzenegger thing, but we've been putting this movie off for some time because this is that movie where Jason set it up. Oh yeah, yeah. Let's do Commando. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a few years. It's been a few years. And then I'd be like, let's do something else. I literally think we're supposed to do this one back when Tales from the Hood. Like, I think ever since then, like, every week is supposed to have been Commando.
You've been bumping this back,
And be like, and now I know why. My subconscious
Dude, this is an – okay, let me say.
You want – well, hold on. No. I get to say this. After the raking across the coals that you gave Assault on Precinct 2, which at least had, like, sparks of creativity, and there were these massive brain-dead gaps in it, and you're – oh, well, these guys just kept coming through the windows and getting shot. And you got these retards that are, like, the worst army ever. ever. In the history of movie armies,
funny about
this
that
is
army.
The worst guy. Yes.
You know what's funny about that army?
What?
They were all supposed to be these South American gorillas.
Yeah.
I think there was
not one gorilla suit. Not one.
No. I think there was maybe one guy, maybe two, that were Hispanic. There were seven more white guys in really bad wigs and really bad beards, like the Castro beard. And there was a couple of guys that were Hawaiian.
What was up with Dan Hedaya? What was up with that? My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. What was his freaking accent? I don't even – what? The, it was so
he
nondescript.
Kind of Mandy Patinkin.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was – yes.
All I kept thinking all I kept hearing from him with that accent was Carla, because you remember he was on Cheers and he was like Carla's ex-husband. Oh, my God. So anyway, let's just start at the top. Let's just jump to the airport.
Give me some of your biggest.
I'm gonna get. Oh, dude, we're gonna be here a while. What time? Let's see. We're doing okay. Okay, I'm gonna.
We have 50 minutes.
Okay.
Or so.
Okay, it's gonna take at least that long. Okay, starting with the airport. I felt like I was being a little nitpicky with the fact, because I know you have to have a few contrivances to make a story like this move forward. So, like I said, the whole killing the guys, which, if in hindsight, by the way, totally unnecessary, because there was no point in them using that as some kind of cover to get him when. All they had to do was show up to begin. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole argument is they kill those guys at the beginning. They're part of his team to act as a cover because Bennett, played by Vernon Wells, was one of the former members of this team, and they wanted to make him look like he had been killed for whatever reason. They never explained it other than just to cover up the whole thing. And then they show up, kill the two soldiers, and then take her anyway. Like, why did they have to go through all that rigmarole of the first part? Why not just show up and take the daughter? You get what I'm saying? Okay. But that, again, nitpicky.
Okay,
I'll let
but
it
that is subtle compared to some of these.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And then the fact, like, when he escapes off the plane, the fact that Sully, the guy who he, you know, there was two guys that actually, you know, went to the airport with him. Sully happens to turn his back, like, at the exact moment that Schwarzenegger is coming
Just
out
like
of the plane.
Jumping out of the plane.
And that is the first key point. He had to jump, I will be conservative and say 80 feet. And the way that whole thing was cut, and if you notice, he hits this swampy land, and I would assume it'd have to be pretty deep for you to hit that and not completely like crush
No, he lands on like a plant bunch.
Oh yeah, he lands on like reeds. Like he should be impaled.
It looks like he jumps off like an 8-foot platform. He just kind of goes splat. Oh, and there's he doesn't really even splash.
He's not even wet. He's not wet from like the waist up.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? So, okay. So again
still kind of subtle.
Still subtle. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then we get to the part where he meets Willie. I'm sorry. Cindy. Ray Don Chong's character.
You done?
Yes. I'm saying Willie because for those of you Temple of Doom fans, all three of you, although I will say I love the iconic end on the scene on the bridge. But that's
Kalima. Kalima.
Yeah. Let's go see. Anyway. What is it? Good. Let's go see Kalima together in hell. So,
yes.
So, you know, Willie though, Kate Capshaw, as much as I love her husband, she in Temple of Doom was grating to say the least. Now, I never found her compared to Ray Don Chong in this film, which is not Ray Don's fault. In my opinion, she had nothing to freaking do. Like there was, and that's the other thing. Why? He's a commando. Let him be by himself. Why did he, other than to kind of have these plot contrivances to help him escape from certain scenarios, why was she even necessary?
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So, yeah. but she's there for these, you think his one-liners are bad? Hers are, wince-inducing. They're just like, oh, God, shot. So.
Can I drop a couple of them?
Go for it.
There's way too much testosterone going around in this room.
Yeah, when the two guys are beating each other to death.
You guys
eat
way too much red meat.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing we're missing, like, after every line.
No, you know what we're missing? We're missing an 80s sitcom laugh track.
Oh, dude. There's like a whole – we need to make a list of all the different cheese ball sound effects we need. So this could be like a Q Morning Zoo. My friend Terry made the observation that when we did the Thermal from the Train podcast with the Ann Ramsey drops that it reminded him
of
like the Q Morning Zoo that was here in Tampa. So anyway, yeah, because that's what we need to cheese it up even more.
No.
So anyway, then when they go to a mall and because he pretty much kidnaps her to follow Sully. Because up to that, Sully had actually been hitting on her and pretty much you got the impression he was about to rape her. I mean, like, that was like the implication. He was very dangerously close to doing something inappropriate. And
follows her out to the car and everything.
So she's already very scared, shaken. And then Schwarzenegger shows up. Oh, sorry. John Matrix. And he gets in the car with her with one hand, rips the seat, the passenger seat out. Which, what was the point to that? Just. Crouch down.
So he can stay low.
Oh, my God.
You don't want people to see
him. Oh, no.
He's too big to lean forward.
You're right. It wasn't to just show that he was
so strong.
So, anyway, so they follow him. And the whole time she's talking about how, you know, but he's telling her about how these people want him dead. And they kidnapped his daughter. And I've only known you 5 minutes, and I already want you dead. So
she was there for comic relief.
Oh, yeah, that's what she was.
They didn't find out.
No, I thought Dan Hidea was the comic relief. Dan Hidea was the comic relief. So, anyway, so they follow Sully to the mall because he's making a stop there to meet with some guy for, I guess, passports.
He's making the payment. Getting passports and making the payment for the assassination.
Yeah,
stuff.
So of Matrix, I guess. Yeah, Matrix. What's Matrix?
No,
oh, that's right, for the
Matrix,
president.
No, the assassination of the president, the Matrix.
But doesn't make any sense. Why are they paying him?
No.
Matrix is the one killing the president.
Oh, no. Maybe they're just paying for passports.
Never mind.
Yeah.
I quit. All right. So anyway, so he's
they go to the mall.
So they have this whole scene where he's just, please, you got to help me. They're going to kill my daughter. and she's like, what do you want me to do? As he tells her to go and follow Sully and like hit on him. And she's like looking at him and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Like just run away, go yell for the cops. Why would you do this? So she goes in. Then, of course, I'll give them credit. They actually made her character not a complete doofus, and she goes to security guard. This crazy big guy's, you know, kidnapped me, blah, 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 tells her. So then the real moron is Matrix. Did he really think she was going to go? Now, if he had set it up to where it was meant to be a distraction, okay, smart guy. No. He actually thought this chick, based on no evidence, no motivation whatsoever, it's going to help his butt.
He was hoping for great human kindness.
God. If hoping is the criteria for your script, dude, you're screwed. And the fact that Stephen D'Souza.
But there was a worse. Wait, there was a worse part to this.
Oh, it gets worse.
Than that.
Oh, it gets so much worse.
He is supposed to be this super covert commando.
Oh, yeah, he's covert, all right.
When the general comes to his hideout, he's you know, lands the helicopter and he kind of walks outside and he's like, John, are you here? You know, he's calling for Matrix. And all of a sudden, Matrix kind of pops up behind him.
Ninja style.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's supposed to be – and so when he's in the mall – and he sends Radon Chong into the bar to hit on Sully. His hiding is like something you see in a cartoon. He's standing behind the big pillar, like peeking up, peeking out, and everybody's staring at him. And he's kind of peeking out, looking. And
oh, and then the security guards come in and confront him. And my favorite, there was a great line where the one skinny guy is talking to the two women. He's like, when it comes, they call him up. We need your help with this guy. He goes, want to see me? Yeah, we know you guys want to see me kick a little ass.
Yeah, that's right.
He's like,
okay. And I'm glad you said that the way you did. I'm glad you said they called mall security because
it's on my notes, dude. This is on my notes. That mall.
I'm not going to argue with any. Anything you bring up. Well, I guarantee
you. It's not going to be very entertaining if you can't argue with it. I was hoping you'd be like, no, wait a minute. I can totally justify there being 85 heavily armed peace officers in this mall. Yeah.
Heavily armed mall cops who all draw
like 100
weapons
of them.
And shoot through the crowd at the drop of a hat. They are shooting at a guy who is unarmed and just kind of is running away.
Well, to be fair, he apparently can like take 12 of them at once and like throw them around like rag dolls.
Well, don't forget when Sully runs, he grabs. First of all, she tells on him, right? So the cops come after him. God. Cops. I called them cops because they have guns, but they're mall cops. They all come to mob him. Sully realizes what's going on. He goes, give me a quarter. Give me a quarter. And it struck me for just a second. I'm like, quarter? What the hell does he need a quarter for? Just pick up your cell phone. Oh,
well,
right.
Here's a better point. Wouldn't it have made more sense, being that you know this guy's like this cold-hearted killer that you're sending in to kill a president of a country, that maybe you wouldn't – oh, I don't know. When he use a payphone in the same mall where he's beating the snot out of all these cops, you might want to –
Run towards him.
But that was the best part. So Sully has a gun. And rather than shooting him, he gets in the phone booth, shoots at Matrix one time, completely misses, point-blank range. Then Matrix runs at the phone booth at any point. Sully could lower his weapon, and movie's over, roll credits, the end. Applause.
Arnold goes up, and he rips the entire phone booth out of the wall, lifts it over his head, and body slams it down on the other side.
Let's jump ahead of them all. Let's just keep going because I had this whole thing down about like they, then all of a sudden he goes to leave. He takes her car, which wow, the key's still in the ignition. Who knew? And then she ends up going with him based on what?
Now she believes him because
why? Why?
Because he's sexy.
Oh god, she hasn't seen him in his banana hammock yet.
But he's got that shirt on. He's ripping through that shirt. Oh, we've already established women can't resist
it. Cannot resist me. I don't even know what the hell that was. All right.
Let me show you my Terminator.
Yeah. And then so they chase Sully down because Sully gets in his car. They chase him down.
Yeah.
And it's the whole thing where Sully hits – they hit a light pole. That was my favorite. So they run him off the road pretty well because Porsche goes flipping over. They hit a light pole. Did you notice nobody's wearing a belt and they barely move forward? Like they hit it.
They hit a light pole going like 80.
Yeah, and they're like,
and they just
are you okay?
You okay? Yeah, I'm okay. And they just jump out.
And so he grabs Sully, hangs him over the cliff. Oh, you said you'd kill me last, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, so fast forward to the motel room. And is it me or was the African-American actor, I don't remember his name, and I'm sure I could just glance and look. Was he the guy from Predator?
Yes, that's Bill Duke. He played
– he's a big guy.
One of my favorite. Yes, he's a huge guy. But he played kind of the really cool, badass-looking guy in Predator.
He's the one that gets his head blown off, right? Or does he get the hole blown in him? Nice Ventura gets the hole blown in him.
No, that's Ventura that gets the hole blown
in
him.
Spoiler alert from Predator.
Yeah. No, Bill Duke is the guy that is shaving.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the blood.
The whole time. And then he has the razor and he kind of clicks it down. And
oh, yeah.
But he's awesome.
Should I get started again about how awful Predators was? Sorry. All right.
We don't have
okay, good. So anyway, they end up at this motel where Sully was supposed to meet the Bill Duke character, Cook. That was his name.
Yeah, right.
And so, of course, they sabotage him and, they start fighting and that's the whole, well, you guys eat two of the red meat, the testosterone in this room. And then they go crashing through a wall. Jason, would you like to take it from here?
No, this isn't my other nudie part, but I'll take that. They're fighting and crashing through a wall for some gratuitous nude scene of a topless woman who, is in the scene next door and they're kind of fighting and, they're fighting to get the gun, and at one point,
her pecs were almost as big as Arnold's, actually. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What? Anyway, lost my train of thought.
Yeah, what? Huh?
Yeah, see? Anyway, no. So he picks Bill Duke up like he's ragdoll, and he throws him, and he eventually throws him on top of, like, a chair leg, and blah!
Yeah,
he
vampire.
And then he picks
him up. Buffy the Vampire Slayer's his ass. That's what he does.
Yeah, totally. Wood stake to the chest. He's like, tell me what's my
So here we go. Plot contrivance scenario, or plot hole number 481. Why kill the guy? Your trail's dead at this point. Oh,
well,
wait.
The guy's trying to kill him. All he's doing is protecting himself, and the guy accidentally dies.
So we just impaled him, and then we're going to look down with blood spewing out his mouth and go, where's my daughter? Yeah.
So they don't, you know, obviously he doesn't say anything, but they do realize when they look through his car, Radon Chung.
Oh, no, no, no. Please let me take this one. Please.
Okay.
I had this one written down.
Go right
so
ahead.
They realize which car is his. How they know? Okay, Schwarzenegger just go, or sorry, Matrix.
It wasn't there before they got
there. That's why. Because in a motel parking lot,
yeah,
totally aware of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. So, yeah, he is Commando. Mm-hmm. So smart that he has, you know, Willy Wannabe hanging out with him. So anyway, so they end up going through his car. They find a receipt for a fuel bill, I guess. Well, who knew?
Airplane fuel.
And who knew? Who knew? Radon Chong and her stewardess self getting her pilot's license. And guess what? She is very familiar because her instructor fuels his plane at the same place. Oh my God! And as we learn,
aren't they lucky?
Oh,
isn't that awesome?
But it's so lucky.
You can't write luck.
Well, someone did, and what kills me is the same guy who did also did Die Hard and Die Hard 2. I'm still trying to figure that out. Of course, to be fair, he also did some
Teen Wolf.
He did Teen Wolf. Steven D'Souza.
No. The writer,
Steven D'Souza was one of the writers. I think he's one of the come in at the last minute and doctor this godforsaken script up writers.
Yes, the original base script was Jeff Loeb and Matthew Weissman. Yeah. They originally wrote it. They also wrote Teen Wolf and a few other classic 80s stuff. But
dude, add Teen Wolf to the list, by the way. Okay. So
anyway, so they show up to where the seaplane is. Turns out they find out there is a seaplane, and she again, through her brilliance.
No, she even knew that the fuel was for an amphibious plane.
Yes, because that's perfectly. She's memorized. So she's a pilot. She just plays a stewardess.
She's a pilot and a stewardess's hot
body. But the best
thing
is they break into a little room where these bad guys are, which apparently this warehouse is now guerrilla military central.
Oh God.
And everything in this warehouse is like all these military weapons and all this stuff in there, and they're all dressed in green fatigues like they're in the army, because that would happen in Southern California.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and let's just kind of hit fast forward here, because honest to God, dude, if we go through every plot hole, we're going to be here all night. I would just say the last thing where they go to the surplus store to get some weapons, and a place that we've never established as one he would know this about. He pushes a button and Yoika! He finds a stash of things like rocket launchers and fully automatic weapons.
Dude, I swear to God, I live where, when I was a kid, where I lived, there was probably 3 Army Navy surplus stores.
There were.
Within a couple miles. But we stopped every so often digging through there, especially as kids, we like looking at the survival stuff. And I swear, I always would look at the wall behind the counter and see where the secret door was after seeing this movie, because I thought they've all got weapons.
They have to, because he knew he was there. So yeah, and then and also, by the way, please pray tell how exactly he then gets caught by the cops and she gets away. Did they ever even remotely show how she escaped?
She was already outside and had already loaded the car with a thousand pounds.
So if the cops are coming
the cops go inside, they don't see her parked right out.
So real police officers, of course, wouldn't have tried to secure the area outside the establishment to make sure that
knowing that there are machine guns and rockets.
Yeah. And then we fast forward to she starts winking at them from her Cadillac. Matrix is in the back of the paddy wagon and the cops are, and she's winking at them. And then she stops the car, pulls out the rocket launcher, and in her infinite wisdom decides this would be a great way to help him escape and launches one.
I thought the same thing. Like, I thought,
and you know you're not going to kill him how? And then I love, how did you know how to use that?
I read the instruction book.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Well,
those are IQ points I will never get back. I'm not saying I had that many to begin with, dude.
But you saw this when it originally came out, right?
Actually, no, I saw it when I was a kid, but it had probably been out for a few years at that. I saw it on video. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it a couple years after it came out. I didn't see it in theaters because I was only like two.
with a zero after it.
But I didn't see this when it came out in theater. I saw it after it had been out a little while. Yeah. But for me, this was the quintessential testosterone movie that kind of kicked me off down that genre. It's not the best of Arnold's. It's not the best, you know, macho man movie. But this was the one that kind of – because nobody – and there's a close runner-up. Listen, wait. There's nobody that can hold a machine gun with a rippling body like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, he holds that machine gun, that M60, like nobody's business.
Mark this spot on the audio to use as future soundbite. So, yeah. I would also say that what you really are trying to tell everybody is that due to the testosterone level in this film, it was immediately following this motion picture that you discovered your first pube.
No.
Oh.
That was later.
Much.
We talked about that movie.
Later.
Can I just put out one last thing, man? Then we can move on.
God, please.
I got one little last thing.
Yes.
I actually didn't notice this until I rewatched it this time when they're at the airport and Bennett says something to him like, you know, you better be a good boy or, yeah, get on that airplane like I told you, something like that. And he kind of goes at him and he leans in. He says, Bennett, I'll be back.
Oh, it was so painful.
I was like, are you serious?
Oh, he did that, okay. And there was a few – Running Man, I think he – because remember when Richard Dawson – I don't remember the character's name – Running Man lowers the – you know, he looks and goes, I'll be back. I mean, he used that after Terminator, like, yeah, in multiple movies.
But this was the – this was 85. I mean, Terminator –
this is the first 85. One after 80 – yeah, because I don't think he used it in Red Sonja. Yeah.
No. So anyway, I saw that and I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh my
but
God.
I love the movie for all its flaws. It is definitely not the best. But, you know, I like the shoot 'em up big bazooka, but it was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, well, hey, look, I like those kind of movies too. I mean, The Expendables, yeah, that just came out was that kind of movie. And The Expendables literally, like, afterwards my wife had grown a beard. So from the testosterone.
Yeah, you come out, well, there's a shot that comes out to the seat when you're watching.
Yeah, I like, I was ZZ Top afterwards. And yeah, my wife had like a nice little Zach Galifianakis kind of beard going on. But it was, you know, but yeah, but Commando was just, dude, if the criteria is testosterone has to equal absolutely dumbass, I'm sorry.
No,
man.
No, not at all.
That movie not was just, because it was just insulting your intelligence on a level that I could not take anymore. I was like, for the love of God. And it's not that people wouldn't do this. I get it's over the top. It's cartoony. I can, but for, let's have some level. I mean, Radon Chong's character, literally no point. Like there's, she has no motivation for anything she does.
This was probably one of the first times I've said this. This was a full-on cinematic nostalgia disorder for me.
Oh, yeah.
I had seen this as a kid, absolutely loved it. I was so excited for us to do it on here, and I thought, God, I just remember this being this awesome shoot 'em up movie. Yeah. I remembered some scenes from it, just some you know, clips in my mind, and I remember there was, you know, kind of 80s action cheesy, but I went and rewatched it, and I was like, oh, wow. Oh, man, Joel's going to eat me alive.
Well, speaking of being eaten alive, Jason, are you ready for our six flicks picks?
I am ready.
HBO. Okay. So I really have no idea, by the way, what that segue of speaking of being eaten alive.
We're going into our six picks. Yeah, it's all good.
Our six picks this go-round are, in fact, movies with one-man wrecking machines, I believe is the theme that we went with, the in-depth, well-thought-out theme. And which, to be fair, Jason,
other movies with one-man wrecking machines.
Yes. Oh, and real quick, a little sidebar note. We did totally forget to mention this. Bill Paxton, cameo. In Commando. See if you could find him. Let's just leave it at that. Bill Paxton cameo, yes. Commando.
Yeah, he makes a very quick one.
And of course,
a very powerful.
Well, it's cool to think that he was also had that little tiny, tiny quick part in Terminator as well. So,
yes.
So, Jason, what is your first pick of the
six? My first pick is probably the eldest of the one man wrecking machines in this entire
the
bunch.
Eldest.
It is, in that it is 1989's The Punisher. Now, The Punisher character. has been around for a while, but this is the first movie full-length, you know, feature film, and it stars one of the greatest 80s badasses in Dolph Lundgren, who saw probably his peak in Rocky IV when he played Ivan Drago, big burly Russian, and then a series of great ones after this. But this one is the story of Frank Castle, who, you know, for comic book fans, I won't go into the depth of the comic book. Basically, he was a cop. The mob got to his family, killed them all. He was declared dead. They thought he was. He survived, sneaks out. He's got, through his workings and his connections, builds up this massive arsenal to basically become this vigilante that just murders anybody who's a bad guy. I mean, he's kind of the antithesis of what Batman was. I mean, though Batman gets darker later on, but, you know, Batman was kind of do good. And,
oh, this is just straight. This is a straight vigilante movie.
Yes, but well, Punisher just in general was kind of that. His big thing. No, he was a big comic book thing, but no powers, lots of weapons. So this one, Dolph Lundgren plays Frank Castle, which they made a remake in 2004 with what's his name? Tom Jane.
Oh yeah, Thomas Jane. Yeah, which they shot in the Tampa Bay St. Pete area, my old hometown. Yes.
Yep, and you know and that also had John Travolta in it, played the bad guy. And that actually, he looked, I think, a better part of Frank Castle. In this, Dolph Lundgren, it really didn't look good. They tried to kind of Italian him up by giving him kind of the greasy, kind of Matt Dillon-y hair and a scruff.
Oh, so what are you saying, Jason? You're saying
he looks like a big Russian guy with dyed black hair.
Oh, yeah, but you said Italian people and you use the word greasy. Really? Is there something you want to tell us about your hatred of people from the boot?
Okay, they tried to give him 21 Jump Street hair, Johnny Depp.
Okay, that's fine. I'll accept that. I'll accept that as a cop-out.
Yeah, and he doesn't really fit it. But again, it is one of those, just like Commando, it is lots and lots and lots of bullets and lots of, you know, people who seem to be these completely inept bad guys with guns, and he just goes and
most... Yeah, the problem with most of these movies is they don't really work unless the bad guys are inept.
Yeah,
they would be very they'd be short films. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Louis Gossett Jr. is also in this. He plays Frank Castle's old partner who comes back and tries to turn him around and help him out. Yeah. It's also got Nancy Everhart, who plays in this. And it's a decent flick in that it's that kind of testosterone romp. Purists of the comic book won't like it. I guarantee it, because they didn't when it came out. But if you haven't seen it, it's worth kind of catching as a Dolph Lundgren flick, not so much as a Punisher flick. But it was good, and I love Dolph. So he is just a huge man, another one of those that holds a machine gun.
And he was awesome in The Expendables, actually.
Was he? I haven't seen that yet.
He was the person I was actually the most excited to see him in the movie.
Yeah, I want to see him. But so anyway, 1989, Punisher – he's one man wrecking crew.
Awesome.
So what is your number five?
Number five is 1990s Steven Seagal starring Hard to Kill. Yes, which honestly, this is the film that I was introduced to Mr. Seagal. And it's actually his second picture. He did Above the Law in 88.
Right.
And then he did this film and actually did within a couple years. He did Marked for Death, Out for Justice, Under Siege. And then he did On Deadly Ground. The first movie, and only one of two, that I've ever walked out of. Granted, it was at the very end, and I was late for football practice.
We've covered this.
Yes. Yeah, don't get me started again. Oh, dear God. I'm just going to find that speech he does and use it as a sound.
We're going to have to have a drop.
Totally, dude, because it's the worst thing ever.
Okay. We will be a morning radio show before we're done.
Oh, we totally were. Yes.
No, please no.
Yes, except they
have talent. Hard to Kill.
So Hard to Kill stars Seagal, Kelly LeBrock, the great William Sadler, who is also the big bad in Die Hard 2. And Seagal plays a guy named Mason Storm. He's sort of a go-it-on-his-own kind of copper. And basically these guys show up. He witnesses something or videotapes something. I won't give it away. And these guys show up at his house. And this is in the trailer, so mild spoiler alert. They gun down his family, or so he thinks. He definitely killed his wife, and he assumes they've killed his son. He goes into a coma. He's being taken care of. His son actually survived and is in hiding, and Kelly LeBrock is the nurse who's nursing him back to health. Well, he wakes up 7 years later, and let's just put it this way. That's a mistake. They should have finished him off, because Seagal shows up and decides he's going to, you know, take care of business, because In fact, he is hard to kill. And he goes on this, you know, one-man wrecking crew rampage where he, you know, rediscovers his son, he retrains, he does all that. But this is I haven't seen this movie in a while, so to say I might have some cinematic nostalgia disorder.
Yeah.
But the last time I saw it, I remember thinking, this actually holds up pretty stinking good, and it was probably my overall, maybe next to Under Siege, and Now for Justice isn't bad, but probably my overall favorite Seagal picture from his kind of his heyday. So Hard to Kill from 1990, plus it has Kelly LeBrock in it. Did I mention that?
Yeah, and there is no ass whooping like a ponytail ass whooping.
Oh, and dude, he's an he really is an Aikido master, and he just
he is.
His skill set is pretty impressive. I mean, with the stuff he's able to do, it's pretty cool.
If you haven't had a chance, watch Steven Seagal Lawman. It's a TV show.
Oh yeah, it's like a reality show, right?
Yeah, and basically he is a real deputy sheriff in Louisiana, where he's from. Because can you believe he's from Louisiana, Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, to be precise.
Is he actually from there, or I know he has a home there?
Yes, he is.
Oh really?
No, that's where he's from, and then he moved to Southern California and went to school, then he went to Japan and studied to become a master and all that stuff. But anyway, it's really cool, and he kind of shows what he does in an off time, and he is definitely that skilled at everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a marksman shooter to the 10th degree better than anybody. I mean, he is just – like everything he does, he's that good.
Hmm.
So anyway, I digress.
All right. So Jason, what is your next pick, the number four on our list?
My next pick is kind of low-hanging fruit in that it is literally a one-man wrecking machine because he is half machine. It is RoboCop from 1987,
a fantastic RoboCop flick.
I absolutely love this movie. There's so many.
That's going to be a boring show when we do it for anybody listening. Be like, God, you know where that would, bro? I love that. Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah. That's part of the reason why we don't cover some of the big ones as our main features because other than just doing a fanboy gush, not so much. But this one's great. It's got some fantastic people in it. It's got some great actors and actresses, including Peter Weller, who was also in Buckaroo Banzai and some others. And then it's got Ray Wise, who is in a relatively new series. He plays the devil. It's called the one I was telling you about.
Was it Reaper?
Yes.
He was also on Twin Peaks. He was the dad in Twin Peaks.
Oh, I never really saw Twin Peaks. I never really got into it.
Yeah.
I heard people talking about everything, but I never really got into it. Anyway, so it's a RoboCop basically is a story of a police officer.
Don't move, creep. Sorry.
Yeah, don't move, creep. Who in future Detroit, everything is out of control. Basically, the drugs are run rampant and the bad guys run the streets. And
it's today Detroit, actually.
I think it's like supposed to be like next year.
Yeah, I think it's pretty now.
Yeah. So, Peter Weller plays a cop who at one point, and this is not a spoiler because it happens at the beginning of the movie, he gets killed by bad guys and they use his body to make him this crime-fighting cyborg giant thing.
Well, the bad guys don't. The bad guys just kill him. You said the bad guys kill him and then use his body.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have a better
Yeah, they create him into this really invincible cop that stops them. They're really idiot bad guys, proving the point that that's the only way these movies work.
Yes, and the bad guys have to try and stop him now because he is a super cop, and he basically goes around kicking ass and taking names, but not so much taking names. Great movie though. There's some cool effects with the giant robot at the end that he fights, which I forget what it's called. I used to know what it is, but
the T-1000.
Yeah, whatever the giant robot is. But this is a cool one. If you haven't seen it, definitely go see it. And thanks to Peter for reminding us many episodes back. This was directed by Paul Verhoeven, who also did some fantastic, fantastic films in the 80s. So this is a great one. Haven't seen it. 1987, RoboCop.
Yes. Excellent. So, excellent.
Your number three?
Yes.
Right?
Number three. All right. Before we get to your number two.
Violent number two.
Yes. Is Invasion USA starring old Chucky Norris from 1985. Yeah, this is another one that's going to take a really long time to explain the plot. So in a nutshell, back in the day, Chuck crossed paths with this Russian feller, and things went south pretty quick. Well, Chucky had a chance to offset Russian feller, goes by the name Rostov, and basically, Rostov wants revenge, for lack of a better word. I think he's having nightmares about Chucky finishing the job. Mm-hmm. So Rostov decides he's going to put himself together a little micro-army and invade the old good old USA and blow crap up and shoot RPGs at suburban houses and do really bad things at malls and all sorts of crazy shenanigans. And of course, old Chucky boy, Matt Hunter. Are we noticing a theme here where they all have like the last name? Hunter.
Yes.
Matrix Storm.
The name. Castle.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Decker. Striker. Mr. Bojangles. Yes. So he's living in the
Mr. Tittles.
Yeah, Mr. Snugglesworth. Old Chucky's living in the Glades, the old Glades down here in Florida. And I don't know why all of a sudden the Florida accent turned into a Louisiana accent, but it did. And they go to, then of course it's dude. Oh my God, I just realized, just like Commando. Like his former handlers come to him and ask him to take on one last assignment, and, which I guess they really didn't do in Commander, to be fair. They said, we need to watch, you know, cover you. But still the same basic idea. And he refuses the call in the classic, you know, hero of a thousand faces, Joseph Campbell kind of way. He refuses the call, but wouldn't you know it, he ain't going to refuse it long or we wouldn't have a movie. So long story short, Chuck just basically kicks ass and blows crap up. That's really all you got to know about this movie. It too, like Commando, is filled with plot holes, pretty massive ones. Although at least this one doesn't have as his sidekick.
You eat too much red meat.
Yeah. So.
I just got to say, the boogeyman checks his closet for Chuck Norris.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I love that. I want that T-shirt.
The Chuck Norris. Yeah, so it was also a little quick side note for all you horror freakazoids out there. It was directed by Joseph Zito, who brought us Friday the 13th Part 4, the final chapter. And, of course, you know, true to their word, and in fact was. It wasn't. No, there was like seven other ones. So, anyway, so that's Invasion USA 1985. Jason, please deliver your number two to us on a platter.
On a poo-poo platter. So I tried to balance out the badasses that we covered in these one-man wrecking machine movies because, you know, there is a plethora of wrecking machines in our generations. And I wanted to cover the biggest. And this is one that I've seen several of, but not all of the iterations. But I chose the first of the series of Dirty Harry. And that, of course, stars the fantastic Clint Eastwood, who plays Harry Callahan. And he actually plays Harry Callahan in five movies: Dirty Harry in 71, Magnum Force, The Enforcer, Sudden Impact, and The Deadpool, which is the last
one. Jim Carrey.
Yes.
And just watch it for yourself to get the full effect of that one.
Yes, definitely. But he basically plays a cop. Let me see. A rogue cop, plays by his own rules, doesn't need a partner.
What?
Sad past, ends up going out to kill the bad guys.
What?
I swear to God, I could be a Hollywood executive.
You really could.
But this one is cool because the thing that Dirty Harry is known for is his big giant Smith & Wesson Model 29/44 caliber revolver.
You should have just said his big gun. Because there's, of course, no Freudian subtext at all.
And this movie is what is famous for, probably one of my favorite badass one-man wrecking machine quotes, which is, I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or five? Would I tell you the truth? In all the excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off, you got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do ya, punk?
Very nicely read. I would like to point out that the reason why it was truncated to the "Do you feel lucky, punk?" which is technically inaccurate, is because it takes way too long to get through. Okay, so and interesting.
I'll leave it at that. You've got to watch. I won't tell you anything else about.
Well, I would like to add the interesting historical side note, because my wife and I just watched Zodiac this weekend, and good movie. Though there were segments where it basically felt like beautifully shot reenactments from America's Most Wanted. That being said, Dirty Harry, that storyline with the Scorpio killer was very much inspired, because it takes place in San Francisco, very much inspired by the Zodiac killer from the late 60s, early 70s. So, but yeah, it's a great classic movie. Absolutely should check that one out. So our number one pick, the one to end all of them, and quite frankly, I think this movie holds up extremely well. I would argue this movie is as much a drama as it is an action movie, but he pretty much just does kick ass and take names. That is First Blood from 1982. Not Rambo First Blood. Yes, John Rambo is the character, but it's First Blood. And this is a fantastic movie where Stallone plays a Vietnam vet who's trying to reconnect with one of his army buddies. And it turns out the guy passed away, right?
Yeah.
And so he's going through
the cancer.
Yeah, and then he's walking back through this town. Well, Brian Dennehy, who is awesome, plays the sheriff. And
he's just an awesome bad guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great pretty much in anything he does. But yeah, okay. So Teasel is the sheriff, and so Teasel starts teasing Rambo, which is a huge mistake. Basically, giving him static. It escalates. There's some mild David Caruso action that happens at some point, and they learn very quickly pissing off John Rambo is a huge mistake. And while all subsequent Rambo movies did become a bit of a parody, this movie truly does stand on its own as being a very, very well-made character piece. Like, this is how action movies should be made, in my opinion. It's intelligent, it's well-made. First Blood from 1982, fantastic flick.
Definitely. I actually saw this recently. I rewatched it and I purchased it. And I agree. It the feel of it, the characters in it, the acting in it is great. And he is definitely a major, major badass in this. Yeah.
It's not a obnoxious testosterone badass. Like,
no.
Because his character is very tragic. And I don't want to give anything away, but let's just put it away. The book and the original ending for this film was a lot darker than they went with. So, it's actually a very well done, kind of character study about post-traumatic stress syndrome and, the effects of, this guy. It's also an interesting allegory about, Vietnam and the fact that, this small town where I'm sure a lot of the people there were supportive of the war. Well, when he comes back and they just assume he's this dirty hippie. Well, he wasn't. Yeah. He was a guy that sacrificed everything for them as far as, he was concerned. And they screw him over and there's a mistake. Yeah, they do. Yep. And great movie. So
fantastic.
So wrapping things up, Jason, holy crap. I think we're almost on time. Mark this down, folks. It might be the last time it ever happens. So let's go ahead and I'll tell everybody, go check the website out, ForgottenFlicks.com. That's Flicks with an X, ForgottenFlicks.com. We've got, great blog posts. Jason does the deep fried cheese reviews, proving time and time again his taste. And so when we then come to the podcast, I really don't have to make much of an argument to say, just go read his reviews.
I hang myself.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. Here's the rope, Jason. There you go. We've got the, came from the 80s. Sherry writes those for us, Sherry White. And we have Peter Nielsen. He writes great reviews for us. Dale Umbrecht has written multiple things for us, does the quizzes, did the Cinemac Essentials. Now he and a guy named Nathan Cohn are doing these two guys talking about movies thing. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, if I'm forgetting anybody, I'm going to feel like a jackhole. Nope, Maggie. Maggie. Almost missed you, Maggie. Didn't do it, though. Maggie Kruger is also somebody who's contributed great. She does a lot of the how-tos and that kind of kind of stuff. She's fantastic. And, everybody's great. Dale hasn't – we haven't gotten a quiz from Dale in a while, but we kind of decided to give that a little bit of a rest. But those movie trivia quizzes we had, he provided those. So we've had lots of great contributors to the site. We really appreciate them. So please come by, check. We also post the podcast there. And – the podcast is on iTunes, so if you just search for Forgotten Flicks on iTunes, you will find us. Subscribe, leave us a review. If you really hate the show and want to complain, email us directly. Be happy to take it to our face. Don't taint our beautiful 5-star record. So, Jason, you want to throw the voice feedback number so people want to call and mock us?
Absolutely. Give us a call anytime. Leave us feedback at area code 206-203-0491. Leave the long mocks for Joel and the short mocks for me.
Yeah, sure. And you can also follow us on Twitter. I am at Forgotten Flicks with an X, and Jason is Flicks Sidekick, and that's with it, also with an X, conveniently enough. And on that note, remember, a flick is only forgotten if you're not talking about it.
Yeah.